just kind of note that.
Testing.
Very good, Phil. Very good. All right, I think we are ready.
Recording in progress.
Well, good evening. The City Council has just returned from a closed session. We finished one item out of four, and we recessed that closed session at 5:55 p.m. I will ask our city attorney if there is anything to report.
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. I will call the regular session to order and ask Councilmember Darris to lead us in a pledge to the flag. Roll call, please.
Councilmember
Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Darris.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll so move.
I'll second.
I think it is always the same. We start out the meeting with the exact same motion and second. We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk, and we will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we're moving on to our consent calendar. The consent calendar contains items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff and can typically be just voted in one motion unless there's a member of the council or the public wishing to pull an item. I would like us to, excuse me, I'll take a quick drink. I got a quick tickle, so hold on.
We'll just pause and give the mayor a moment. We've all been there.
I'd like us to, oh, isn't that a lovely sound? I got a tickle, sorry there. I'd like us to talk about number four. I asked the city manager to address the two items that we had said with regards to bringing that back to us in terms of the policy.
I'm sorry, is that a question for me?
I said city manager, I think.
Oh.
Do we address that now, or do you approve the first portion?
I'm happy to call for approval of 1, 2, 3, and 5.
Do we need to see public comment first?
Just 1, 2, 3, and 5. Is there anyone wishing to pull 1, 2, 3, or 5? Seeing none.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar items A1, 2, 3, and 5.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Borbo, second by Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right.
Yes, I'd be happy to, Mayor. Thank you. So, relating to A4, there were two items that the mayor felt warranted some additional discussion. This was appreciated the council's interest in this item last time it was here. You had some good dialogue on program implementation. One of those things being that if we added a requirement to have the debt deferral or the fee deferral payable upon sale or conversion to condominiums, does that impact any one project's ability to get financing? So that was the first question. So Mr. Dunsmore, do you want to share your thoughts on that and what you found out?
Yes, thank you, City Manager. Yes, in fact, we reached out to some of the affordable housing developers and haven't found that that would pose an issue. Most of these affordable housing developers, they hang on to these projects. Now, they might change their ownership name and they do some things like that, but that's not the intent of what this particular ordinance is. The intent here is if someone sells this project to a whole different party and it's a smaller project, that this isn't going to get lost in the system. Even though we're going to have a deed restriction on this, this is one more caveat that I think council has expressed in the last hearing that might be a good idea to have in there. It can work. It's just an extra clause to have in there, but again, totally at the option of council, but we have found that it's not going to impact their ability to get financing, to get grants, and seems to be an acceptable provision.
Okay, so the second, would you like me to continue, Mayor? Yeah. So I think, and I would agree with the director, that I think this provision makes sense that if you're selling a project out to condos, you have cash coming into the project, that should take care of the balance then and there. The second item of interest was regarding we had talked about what interest do we charge on the loan, and really trying to make sure we had 4% was the original kind of thing, and in this rate environment where we may see further increases, is the city's funds then subsidizing a loan at a rate that's subpar? And otherwise, conversely, if rates drop, are we overcharging for a project that so there was some desire of the council to capture a rate that reflects better current market conditions, and so staff had recommended we wanted something that was very easy, very public, there wouldn't be debate over where the rate came from, and it was easy for us to administer. And so we had suggested the last average rate of return in the quarterly treasurer's report that is publicly available and shown to the council, with a 1% for the risk and the convenience of the deferment. There was a question that I wanted to check with the council to make sure, is that a good indicator, or are there other suggestions that you may have? But we're open to that. We just threw this out there as a transparent recommendation.
If I may, I would suggest if we're going to work from the treasurer's report that we look at the return that the city gets on the invested dollars, because that's more effectively the marginal rate of return for additional funds, as opposed to the city has, if you think about the buckets of money that we have in the treasury, there's some of it that is kept in cash so that the city can have cash flow and handle things, and some things are kept in very short-term investments. And then we have a pool of things that are where we're part of, with other cities investing in like assets that are going to be held for a period of time. It's sort of like a city mutual fund, and that would be the city's marginal cost of funds, and would be a reasonable number for that, as opposed to the average overall.
So in my understanding, you're suggesting that we would take away the LAIF and cash investments that have a very low return but are more there for liquidity, and take the average of the actual investments that we have?
Yes.
Do we benchmark that, Ms. Rangel, in the report separately?
We do not currently. That's typically kind of collectively benchmarked together.
We could, for simplicity, take the largest pool of investment, the largest investment pool in which the city participates, and have that so that if you think about your pie chart of what the returns are for various parts of the portfolio, take the biggest one that is of our generally invested funds, as opposed to having to do an average. If we've got three or four different things and we don't do an average, let's just take the big one.
Councilmember Borba, did you have a?
Yeah, I would comment that I'm glad that Mayor Pro Tem Funk brought this up. I think it's a good idea, but I am concerned about the difficulty of administration for Jerry's shop. If you have to determine something separately, but I'm wondering if we just word it as instead of putting it into the ordinance what the term will be, just say they will be charged a rate to be established by policy, and let you come back with this just as a policy thing, and that one that you could change as well.
We just, whatever the council desires, yeah. I think we just want to make sure it's a...
I just don't want to make...
Ms. Rangel can say, okay, there's the rate, and put it in, and we're not trying to run a permutation of something.
And I'd like her to be able to do that, though, without additional work. So I think it's a good idea, but is it worth trying to implement, or can we just say, we'll charge a rate to be established by policy, and you'll come up with the policy?
Another option I thought of was looking at the city yield and the two-year treasury and saying... you know, taking the highest of that one at the last quarterly report and then adding a percent could be also an easy way. I don't know.
Okay.
But, you know, happy, you know, we can't go much more here tonight on it, but wondering if Councilmember Bourbeau's decision, I mean, we could, but we've got other things to get to. I'm wondering if Councilmember Bourbeau's offer of just, you know, coming back with a rate, or if we have a general consensus here on what we'd like to see.
I can be flexible. I think it's going to be hard to track separately for every single one for Jerry's team, so I don't want to create any more work, especially going through that budget process.
I think your suggestion, Mayor, might, if you don't want to just, you know, have the policy later, then I think the mayor's suggestion would kind of get to Mayor Pro Tem Funk's point and would use already established numbers that are in the quarterly investment report.
Would that be okay with you, Mayor Pro Tem? Okay. And Councilmember Darris? All right. So how about we change it to that, to the higher of the city yield or the two-year weighted treasury portfolio yield that is in them. But actually, before we actually make that decision, I want to go out to public comment because we do have a member of the public wishing to speak, but knowing that this is kind of the direction we're thinking. At that, I will ask, we have Mr. Kirkland with his hand raised, so if you would bring him on, please.
Okay. I'm not sure. I think we're changing a resolution and ordinance. I want to make sure we have the text that you're voting on.
Okay. Before Thank we you. Know. Mr. Kirkland, you are here.
Thank you. What I'm calling about is this looks like the city is going into the banking and construction business. And we have, well, I think we do, at least I have, we have several banks, savings and loans and credit unions in the city, whom I assume, because they loan money out, they hire people who are very good at looking at a proposed business of any kind or construction and determining if that construction or that business is viable. And they do that, and then they, if they think it is, they loan the money. I don't know if the city hires people to do that sort of thing. But if they don't, you're going to have to, I think, hire people who are very good at looking at businesses or proposed businesses or construction and determine if this is a viable option. My suggestion is that the city allow the private businesses that we already have in town to determine what businesses are viable and will loan and which ones won't. I don't think the city has extra people there to determine whether something is viable or not. And this is a case of where government gets into an area where, in my opinion, it doesn't belong. Stick to make safety and maybe roads, but don't get into other things where you don't have, in my opinion, the expertise to do it viably. Stick with the main purpose of government. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kirkland. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on this item? Anyone here in the public or on Zoom? Feel free to raise your hand. I'm not seeing anyone, so I will go ahead and close public comment. And part of the challenge, as we talked about at our last meeting, is when it comes to affordable, particularly the low-income and very low-income housing, it really isn't a free market process for many reasons that we could go into, but we won't tonight. And so what we as a city are doing are trying to add it to the layers of money and you know, opportunities for nonprofit developers to come in and be able to build these homes by way of, or rental properties in this case, by way of being able to then get the federal matching funds. So the deferral of fees is something that helps them to do that. We've also done this to incentivize for-profit businesses in the past, and so it's not that we're getting into the business of construction or development, but it is an incentive for things that the city, meaning all of us, want to see happen, and that is sometimes development, sometimes it's low-income housing and other things. I would ask, we did address last time, I believe, the ability to repay, and we seen other cities and there hadn't been any issues, but maybe staff could touch on that ability to repay.
There has been no record of default in speaking with other cities. and no issues with repaying these. Now, they are longer term, so only time will tell if that becomes the case. But given the parties that are utilizing these opportunities, that potential seems to be very unlikely.
All right. Thank you, Councilmember. Oh, Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Yeah, thank you. I just note further that the businesses who would qualify for these for the impact fee deferral that we're talking about here would be ones that have already qualified for federal tax credits on these projects. So they have been very heavily vetted, and this is one of these projects typically involve 6 to 8 different sources of financing. So we are we have other partners whose action who have vastly greater expertise in evaluating these projects that have already weighed in on them by the time this particular provision would be activated.
Point well made. With that, do you have some specific language for us?
Yes, and yes. I hope our administrative services. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I thought you were looking at me. I was going to say yes, I do.
Let me make sure I heard it correctly. I also want to make sure our administrative services director and city clerk are catching this. So, for both the staff members, I believe we're only amending the resolution. If you could look along with me, the ordinance cannot be amended on second reading. So, if we're only amending the resolution, I think we're okay. And I didn't see the 1% reference in the ordinance. So. What I would suggest, I think I've heard from the council, is that in section 3 of the draft resolution on page 29, the last portion of the sentence would be, shall be the city's investment return as presented in the most recently council adopted quarterly treasurer's report or the current 2-year treasury reel, whichever is greater, plus 1%. Is that what I heard?
That works. And so you're saying that isn't in the ordinance, so we don't have any issue?
No.
Correct.
So you would amend the resolution. The motion would be to approve the resolution with that amendment and also amending Exhibit A.
Okay. And so, Director Rangel?
Can I clarify? Are we talking about the 2-year treasury weighted yield for the city's portfolio or the 2-year treasury rate?
We're talking about the higher of the 2 plus 1%. So when I'm looking at our second quarter treasury report, we have the city yield and the 2-year treasury. So we're saying the higher of those two plus 1%.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, absolutely. All right. And with that clarification, motion?
I wanted to ask, though, I was looking at page 31, and I see city manager was referring on page 29, section 3, but page 31, is that... part of the ordinance?
No, it's part of the resolution. The resolution. So you're amending the resolution and Exhibit A to the resolution.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
Would you like to make the motion?
I will make a motion to approve item A4 with the change in language that the city manager presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to our updates from the city manager, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Mayor and members of council. We have several updates. We'll pull up our slides. This weekend, we have a great opportunity to serve our community for the 27th annual Atascadero River and Creek Cleanup Day. So it is Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. This is a great way to show our creek and our environment some love. Check-in will take place starting at 9 a.m. at the Atascadero Mutual Water Yard at 6575 Sycamore Road, so the yard at Sycamore Road. You will be assigned a location, or you can choose one, and we'll get right to work on the Atascadero Creek cleanup. Bring gloves, buckets, and sturdy closed-toe shoes and water. So if you do want to participate, they'll be looking to make sure you're safe with gloves, buckets, closed-toe shoes, and water. Thank you for keeping our waterways healthy and free of pollution if you're able to help. Again, this Saturday, September 30th, from 9 until noon at 6575 Sycamore Road. Next weekend, mark your calendar for a couple things. We have a big weekend. I think Terry likes these big weekends. We're lining another one up. So kicking off on October 6th, we'll have First Friday that will include the Chamber's Sip and Shop program. So you have First Friday with the Sip and Shop program. So no excuse not to have fun and spend some money downtown, pick up some nice new things from our merchants while you're enjoying a glass of wine with the wristband you purchased at over 15 merchant locations downtown. So businesses will be open late for shopping, and the city will also have the Jump Jacks Band playing here at City Hall with historic City Hall tours from 5:30 to 7:30. So great night Friday. And then you roll right into our wonderful celebration of Colony Days, where we celebrate our city's history, taking place on October 7th with the parade at 10 a.m. along El Camino Real between Kerberil to West Mall. We'll have festivities in the Sutton Gardens beginning at 12 noon, dog races, a variety of booths, and entertainment that represents our city's history. City Hall tours will also be happening from 12 to 3. And it's free, but we encourage you to spend money downtown on food, drink, and items while you're here. So always a wonderful day as we celebrate our city's unique heritage at Colony Days on October 7th. The downtown paving project is underway. So if you've seen West Mall, you'll notice that it's rolling. We had several discussions with a town hall with Town Hall Merchants on September 14th, really trying to communicate and over-communicate where the project is, what the impacts are. We're very cognizant of the work being done and where it's being done. We did do in-person points of contact with business owners. We have a website with a two-week look ahead, and we are emailing folks, keeping them apprised. We're working on West Mall right now, so you can see the sidewalk on the, I guess it's the north side, northeast side, and then the south side will be completed after that, and they'll be moving on next week to Palma, the curb ramps there, and that's the most impact on Entrada. It should be pretty light. But we are continuing to update people as phase one goes. This is curb ramps, improved street surfacing and striping, and really limited to impacting pedestrians really at this point. But getting the concrete work done. You approved the paving work earlier, which is great, and that will start later after the concrete work. So we're working on West Mall between Capistrano and Lewis. And as I said, next week we'll be on Palma between Traffic Way and West Mall. We continue to work closely with the contractor on the construction schedule to mitigate any impacts of the downtown business area. And as I shared, we're really trying to over-communicate. Next item exciting, we apparently, as I've been walking around, are pigeon-free. So this was something I know that was important to the community and the council. Caltrans did work to remove the pigeons under the Trafficway Bridge. There's a number of stops. They closed everything up. And they certainly seem to be working very well. So thank you to Caltrans for assisting us in addressing this issue. You continue your investments in the community. The Atascadero Lake Park Pier and Pathway improvements are underway. There's a picture there. You can see concrete's being poured. Forms are in. The new ADA ramp and railing will be installed next week, followed by the new deck boards and railing on the pier. And we're hoping to have this project wrapped up in 3 weeks. So this is a quick one and a neat project for access and enjoying our beautiful lake. The Atascadero and Graves Creek vegetation and debris removal is scheduled to begin. We've hired a contractor to begin this vegetation and debris removal along Atascadero Creek over the next 2 weeks. The work includes removing down trees, vegetation debris, and litter ahead of the winter storms. The work is expected to approximately take a month. We're really looking, as you've been reading in weather reports and just people looking to the future, it does look like another wet winter coming. And so we want to take every precaution to make sure this type of work can get done so our community is prepared for what we may have gone through this year. The contract will also be removing the debris in Graves Creek. However, the amount of debris is considered minimal compared to Atascadero Creek. The work is part of the city's broader effort to clean culverts, swales, and our stormwater systems in preparation for the rain season. Just a few other announcements. I hope you'll be able to join some of us tomorrow as we honor the life of a wonderful man, Mayor Steve Martin. There's a community celebration in Paso Robles tomorrow at 5:30 at the City Park Gazebo. And there's an opportunity to watch the service as well at prcity.com/YouTube. But Mayor Martin was also an Atascadaran, and we honor his family and his legacy by our attendance tomorrow. Coffee with the Cop is set for October 4th at Malibu Brew at 8 a.m. I know they're all looking forward to talking with us and answering questions and hanging out. So October 4th at 8 a.m., come get to know our police officers. They're amazing people, and they are servants of our community, keeping us safe. Finally, a big announcement here. A-Town Skate Park is excited to announce that Clare Park's placed number one in the World Skate Scootering Pro Tour held last weekend in Barcelona, Spain. So Clare is a community celebrity here. Congratulations to you. On October 4th at 4 p.m., we want to celebrate her and this amazing accomplishment. We really want to try and celebrate people in our community for their amazing accomplishments. So Clare, congratulations from your city. We look forward to honoring you on October 4th at 4. That concludes my report. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Any questions of the city manager? All right. We are now going to community forum. And community forum is the portion of our meeting reserved for individuals who would like to address the council on a topic over which we have jurisdiction, but that is not on our agenda tonight. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we will have the timer going so you can kind of keep track of your time. And we set aside a total of 30 minutes for community forum. We don't typically address items. We can't discuss them this evening, but I do my best to triage and get you answers if that's what you're asking. With that, we go ahead and open up community forum, and anyone wishing to speak, please come to the podium or raise your hand in the webinar. You all must be here for other items. All right, we have someone coming forward.
Good evening, Austin Solheim with El Camino Homeless Organization, or ECHO. Tonight, I just wanted to come and say thank you. Thank you to the amazing community, thank you to the council, thank you to all of our amazing sponsors who helped us this past weekend to put on our Long Walk Home event and fundraiser for ECHO in Atascadero and in Paso Robles. Altogether, we had about 250 amazing community members who were able to come out and join us and help raise over $50,000 in funds for ECHO. This year has been absolutely incredible as we celebrate 132 men, women, and children who have gotten back into permanent, sustainable housing in our community. And it is just amazing to see the work that the council, the community, and all of the amazing people that are in this amazing Central Coast corridor coming together to make efforts to support those who need it most. So thank you so much. Thank you to all who could attend. Thank you to our sponsors, to all the volunteers, and thank you to the council for allowing us to continue the collaboration work that we are doing to really help those who need it most.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on public comments, or not public comment, community forum? Anyone in the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand if you are. We have Mr. Jeff Oslin.
Good evening, Council. Two quick items, if you can hear me.
Yes.
Perfect. Just wondering if Public Works has the date set yet to do the Del Rio overpass area, so those bumps can be out of the road. I did see an individual out there this morning that I'm sure was a member of the community because the car was dark and he was painting orange all over the road. So just curious where we are on that. And secondly, being I'm not in attendance tonight, but could we start unlocking the stairway door again for city council meetings so we can utilize the stairs as well as the elevator, please? Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? I am not seeing any hand raised. I'm not seeing anyone else in chambers. Last call. All right, we will close community forum. I've turned off my mic. Thank you, Austin. I know many of us were there, and it was a wonderful event. And I love hearing you speak because every time you do, it's a new number. It's a new number. The number of people who are getting housing through ECHO and the programs that you offer is just incredible. You guys are on fire, and thank you so much for the work that you're doing on behalf of all of us here. Thank you. And Mr. Oslin, I will ask our city engineer if you would respond regarding Del Rio, and then maybe the city manager could talk about the unlocking the stairway for the council meetings.
I could probably answer both of those.
All right.
But
you think you can handle that?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
I feel very confident in you, yes.
So Del Rio, we're soliciting some quotes from contractors. This is kind of this is in the intersection of the southbound ramps and the Del Rio, southbound US 101 ramps and Del Rio. This will require like night work, lane closures. It's kind of a much bigger deal. It's in Caltrans right away, so we're soliciting quotes right now for a contractor to do that, and talking to Caltrans right now. We do have a blanket encroachment permit, so we're trying to, rather than getting in the queue, that's going to take 8 to 12 weeks to get a permit issued. We have a blanket encroachment permit, so we're kind of seeing if we can work with the contractor on maybe, you know, working under that or a double permit. So we are working on that, Mr. Oslin, and I appreciate your patience. And then I think the second item he mentioned was We often, during council meetings or public meetings, we have an most people take the elevator up to the fourth floor. We've always traditionally left one of the hallways open, so if somebody that doesn't, say, claustrophobic or just doesn't like elevators or trust them or whatever, can take a stairway up or down. So I believe we've been doing that. So if not, I will make sure we are. But we usually keep the stairwell behind me open.
Maybe Mr. Oslin just needs to press harder on the door handle. Just teasing, Jeff. Just teasing. Well, and actually, some of us, we're not afraid of elevators. We just like to get a little exercise in. Councilmember Bourbeau here likes to take them two at a time. He came in after me, and it was just, I heard this boom, boom, boom. I was like, what are you doing? He's like running up the stairs. Like, that was impressive, quite frankly. We have some steep stairs.
Exercise is good.
Exercise is good. Thank you. All right. We have no public hearings tonight, and we will move on to our one management report, which is an ordinance regulating camping in the areas of the city. And I will turn this over to our police chief, Mr. Allen.
Mayor, I'm going to start just quickly with an introductory comment, I may, before we turn it over to Chief Allen. I think the ordinance before you tonight, I just wanted to share, is kind of the culmination of direction that came from the council back at strategic planning and some of your action items about looking at how we are able to better manage the stuff and the camps and some of the things that we've observed in our community. I did want to reiterate first and foremost the successes that we've heard, that our team and our focus is really serving with compassion the unhoused population of our community and really trying to work to find housing for them. So I just wanted to say that first and foremost, that is our goal. And I love to hear the success that we have, as do all of you, that we are housing people who need housing. So first and foremost, before we started, I wanted to speak to that. The ordinance before you was written from a standpoint of dealing with stuff and dealing with camps and really looking at that and not so much the individual, because we're working on helping and housing individuals with compassion. But as we saw, when people have stuff and it starts building and impacting public spaces and safety and health and welfare of our community, we needed a tool. And so the ordinance before you tonight is written from a perspective of giving us a tool to deal with stuff and to provide places for people to park and stay for a short period of time, because we recognize people need that, but not have large groups of vehicles mounting in areas where that could be a challenge, again, for health and safety. So the perspective of the ordinance tonight is that perspective, to give us those tools, but first and foremost, always trying to remember that we are serving people who are unhoused and really trying to work with them to make that step towards housing. So I just wanted to start with kind of a reminder of where this ordinance came from and its impetus, how it's addressing some of the issues we've seen in our community. And that first and foremost, we are dealing with people, and we want to help them with compassion find a home. That's always our number one goal. This deals with the stuff. So I just wanted to kind of frame that before we turn this over to Chief Allen for a discussion on the ordinance being before you. We welcome discussion. Obviously, this is a policy thing, and so we're really looking forward to hearing from the council tonight where you are on it. Does this reflect what you directed us to do? Does this cover the things that you were looking for? And we're certainly willing to talk through it and take any steps the council chooses. So I'll turn it over to Chief Allen. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to be clickerless today. So if I nod or raise my hand or something like that, it's not at any of you great folks. But this is our first slide? Yeah. Okay, so we all understand that homelessness will equal a significant challenge under any circumstances, whether it be Atascadero, San Luis Obispo, Oxnard, or San Francisco. And we are doing our very best to manage it from a person-to-person case. That's why we have so many dedicated resources for it right now. We are currently partnering, and I don't know if you know who we're partnering with San Luis Obispo Behavioral Health, with ECHO, and with we have a mental health crisis worker, a social worker, and the other one is we have an ECHO representative. Well, we need a new one because that one isn't working for us anymore. But they have a dedicated person that will work 20 hours a week as a social worker from ECHO, and hopefully getting them into more, getting our folks into more housing opportunities. We are engaging in camp cleanups every single day. This is at a city expense to try and keep these camps from, you know, polluting our creeks or polluting our sidewalks. There are certain, you know, health and safety needs that we're trying to meet for community members as well as the folks that are unhoused right now. We're also doing things, like I just spoke of, to address the mental health needs of all these individuals. And with mental health, it goes hand in hand with the drug addiction or the drug use that we're seeing in these homeless communities. We're doing our very best to provide housing when it's available, and when these people qualify for it and they really reach out and they want to make a change in their life. So going back to the original prohibited camping ordinance, I was here when that was developed, and it prohibited camping on any public land in the city of Atascadero. As a result of the decisions that were made in Martin versus Boise, as well as the city of Grants Pass, Johnson versus city of Grants Pass decisions, there's also been several ballot measures, state legislation, and limited enforcement of our current camping prohibition ordinance. So we needed to make a change. And at the direction of the city manager, I worked on that. The proposed draft ordinance should regulate time, place, and manner of camping. It'll regulate vehicle habitation and camping on private and public property. It's developed through a collaborative effort through many, if not all, city departments, as well as the information that we got to develop our current ordinance that I have before you. All that information came from basically three other cities who have enacted their prohibition on camping ordinances. So I didn't reinvent the wheel. I just borrowed some other people's information and carried it to the needs of our community. The standards seek to address public peace, health and safety, fire risk, unsanitary conditions, and trash. It defines camping when and where camping by necessity is not permitted. It defines unlawful storage of public property and the abatement of the stored property. And it's easy to explain the parameters to our unhoused residents. So the city department's intention is to respond compassionately with a multidisciplinary team to the homeless population. And we've already expressed that. The goal is to get the homeless residents services and housing. The updated ordinance provides additional tools to address public peace, health, and safety issues while keeping with the law. Staff recommends adoption of the proposed ordinance, repealing and replacing Atascadero Municipal Code Title 5, Chapter 15, Prohibited Camping. The recommendations are to adopt draft urgency ordinance A, repealing and replacing Title 5, introduce for first reading by title only draft ordinance B, which repeals and replaces Title 5, Chapter 15 in its entirety. Define prohibited camping on public and private property, regulate storage of personal property on public property, establish time, manner, and place regulations for camping by necessity. And that's my presentation, because I know there'll be a question or two.
I wonder if you want to go through a little more detail just for public's edification. I mean, we've all read the staff report, but not necessarily everyone has, but that time, manner, and place, give a little bit more information
sure.
for the public.
Okay, so those three items, they're high points on most everybody has a current camping ordinance that'll be in line with those two federal decisions that were that made our current ordinance basically illegal to enforce. If I talk about time, place, and manner, sorry, I have a powerless point here. Okay, so when we talk about time, place, and manner, there are certain times that if somebody is unhoused by necessity, you know, there's not a bed available to them, and they're not just rejecting a bed that's available to them. So that's camping by necessity. There was no place else for them to go. So what the time element is that they could camp between 8 p.m. and 7 a.m. There would be no prohibition for them to do so. so long as it wasn't in an exempted place. And there are several places that are exempted in the community. I could go over that whole list if you'd like to. I could.
I think it would be very helpful to do so.
Okay. Yeah. As the ordinance is written currently, prohibited camping in the following public property, which will be deemed to include the entire parcel unless signage is posted designating permissible camping at the locations on the parcel as part of an overnight sleeping program established by the city. So these places would be prohibited and within 500 feet of the Atascadero City Hall, Centennial Plaza, Atascadero Public Library, the Atascadero Transit Center, Colony Park Community Center, Atascadero Lake Pavilion, Atascadero Zoo, the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial, the Plaza on El Camino, and within 500 feet of a school, within 500 feet of the banks of the Salinas River, Atascadero Creek, or Graves Creek, on the entirety of the San Juan Bautista Anza Historic Trail Corridor, areas of parks, athletic fields, sports courts, irrigated or landscaped areas, park playgrounds, synthetic turf areas, and park picnic areas, including tables, bleachers, benches, and pavilions, within 500 feet of any bridge, highway underpass, or highway overpass, or any freeway on-ramps or off-ramps, in very high fire-sensitive zones, and within 500 feet of all Atascadero government buildings. And it says, also, camping shall be prohibited within 100 feet of any public property where signs are posted stating that camping is prohibited at that location. The city manager or their designee is authorized under this subsection to post signage on public property prohibiting camping for over 30 days upon determining that camping or storage of personal property at such a location has created a nuisance condition that affects the health and safety of the public or the occupants. That would be a situation where we are at a camp and we seize drug paraphernalia or something like that. The city manager or his designee can say, no, we're not going to be able to use this area anymore because it's basically been contaminated. And so that is place. I talked about time, place, and then
manner is the other, yes.
So in the manner, it says that no person shall obstruct access to a street, sidewalk, park, playground, public utility, public property, or other public right-of-way open for pedestrian travel or for government use. And that's by sitting, lying, sleeping, or storing, using, maintaining, placing personal property in a manner that does not allow for passage as required by the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 as amended from time to time, or by sitting, lying, or sleeping, or by storing, using, maintaining, or placing personal property within 10 feet of any operational or utilizable entrance, exit, driveway, or loading dock, or by creating any barrier with string, wire, rope, chain, or other attachments or appurtenances upon city-owned trees, light poles, fences, equipment, or other public facilities. A camp or camping, including outside stored personal property, must be limited to a spatial footprint of no more than 100 square feet, 10-foot by 10-foot area. The intent of this provision is to allow a person to sleep protected from the elements and maintain the essentials of living while still allowing others to use public spaces as designated and intended. Individuals may not accumulate, discard, or leave behind garbage, debris, unsanitary, or hazardous materials or other items for no apparent utility in a public right-of-way, on city property, or any adjacent public or private property. Start or maintain any fire for the purpose of burning any combustible machinery or gas heater in or around the campsite. And that's erect, install, place, leave, or set up any type of permanent or temporary fixture or structure of any materials in or upon public property or public right-of-way. Items such as tents and similar items for use for shelter are readily portable and not structures for purpose of this section. They're not to dig, excavate, tear soil, alter the ground or infrastructure, cause environmental damage or damage vegetation or trees in and around a campsite. They're not to accumulate, discard, or leave behind garbage, debris, unsanitary or hazardous materials, sewage, drug paraphernalia, improperly disposed of syringes, other evidence of conspicuous drug use, or on the public right-of-way, on city property, or any adjacent public or private property.
Uh,
Okay, I think you got it all there. Yes.
What's that?
I think you got it all, yes?
I added the time, place, and manner.
Yep.
And there's also the private property element, if you want that explained.
No, I think we're fine. And often, I will say that often we do like abbreviated staff reports, but in this case, I think it was important to have all of this so that anyone listening, anybody here, understands what we are looking at. And what I would ask, and to the city manager's point, this isn't something that if this gets passed tonight, we're running out tomorrow and with a sledgehammer and beating people over the head.
No, it would be the, again, we would be the agency that would be enforcing it. Our goal would be to do the exact same thing we're doing. And what we would make sure we do is try and be in compliance with the ordinance as best we can. There's a letter of the law and the spirit of the law. And honestly, we want to use more of the spirit of the law than the letter of the law. I think the ordinance usually would only fold into any situation where we're not really getting compliance. They're building small cities. They're blocking sidewalks. They're becoming a public nuisance. Several drug arrests have occurred in a certain location. Those kinds of things where public safety and unsanitary conditions are existing, we would be able to have this ordinance to explain to these folks this can't keep happening. We're doing really good with the team that we have that goes out in the field. They go out every single day during the week, Monday through Friday, and they reach out to all these people. They've told me today that there's 35 to 45 unhoused individuals living in the city of Atascadero. That'll fluctuate up to like 50, and it could go down to 35. All depends on, some people go to jail, some people go to the hospital, some people find housing, some people find relatives that will take them back in. Again, all those efforts are being made. That is the goal, is to keep up what we're doing. This is, we're not going to ramp up enforcement. That is not what our goal is. This is just a tool to replace a tool that we cannot use anymore whatsoever because it's an invalid law.
So this is the tool for when all of those other things don't work and we're facing a health and safety issue, essentially.
Correct. We're not going to change the way we do business. I don't think the city manager is going to direct us to do anything different than what we're doing, because I can't say that it's working. I can say that it's working better than in some communities. Where the outreach seems to be the best way of dealing with our unhoused community.
Okay, thank you. So I will look to my colleagues for questions. Councilmember Darris.
Thank you. Just some clarification on the place. I mean, it's pretty clear on the list of, now I lost the page. The list of places where you cannot, which you went through every single one of them, and then there's the section right before it where if somebody owns a piece of property, they can't have people camping and allowing it to happen. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, but I think if it's I didn't see it in here. If I'm missing it, all the places that is prohibited outright is for somebody to camp on somebody else's private property without their knowledge. Because that got brought up, excuse me, at a DRC meeting last week that I was at, the project that was proposed. There were some concerns, well, hey, this might create an area for homeless people to come in and camp out when they want to because of the way the project was designed. The people in the room didn't realize that, no, it's private property. That can't happen at all anyway. So I'm just wondering if that's something that should be in this to make it clear that on private property, whether the owner is aware of it or not, is not allowed. And I don't know if that's clear in here. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. There is a provision in the staff report and in the ordinance that addresses private property camping. Again, if you look at what it says, this is another one of those that it's a letter of the law thing or a spirit of the law. Again, we are would respond to this on a complaint base. Issue if a neighbor says that they're letting two or three people camp in this other neighbor's yard, we'd respond out there and tell them, well, we have this ordinance. You may not know about this ordinance, but here it is. And we would do the education piece, and we'd do our very best to gain compliance from them because nobody's going to possibly know that if they're, they think they're doing something good for the community when they're not allowed to do that. And also there are zoning laws that are going to affect that. If you have several families living on your property, if you're not zoned for that, then it would be an unallowable occupancy.
Okay. And I think I found it now. But I just wanted to make sure that the public is clear that, we've got it all covered. But it is in here. I dismissed it.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. And along those lines, I mean, the premise is that if it's happening on private property, without the knowledge of the owner, that's trespassing, and they can be immediately told to, you know, to move on. I mean, a property owner could call the police, would be the premise, right?
If somebody's camping on somebody's property without their permission, and then the property owner or representative says, we don't want them on our property, we would tell them to leave. If they didn't leave, then they could be arrested for trespassing.
The ordinance before you, though, to be clear, is really trying to address the Boise and Grants Pass issues on public property.
I understand.
So
that's the primary thing. But as Councilmember DeRiz noted, or with his question, but as you noted, there is a provisions for doing it on private property. My only concern is that it says there that the they can a faith-based institution, nonprofit, or a business with the permission of property owner or lessees. And only after the owner is issued a city permit that we need to have such a city permit. I mean, I don't know many property owners would want to do that, but we might have a church or something that wants to do that. And so I understand we don't currently have a process for that, but we would develop one.
We would have to develop one, yes. Yeah. And the reason we'll go through community development is because they would know better than me whether or not that's a permissible use.
Sure. The other question I have is in, you know, we list on page 48 of our agenda packet under the place, the time, manner, and place. Under the place, we say camping is prohibited in the following public property, and we have this whole list that you went through. And it begs the question of what is okay? and so, you know, like what's left in the city? And along those lines, I have two questions. One is why 500 feet? Because 500 feet feels like an awful lot. It almost feels like somebody might look at that and say, this is our way of saying nowhere without really saying nowhere. And it seems to me that I've read from other jurisdictions, usually something like 200 feet is more common, maybe 300 feet. And I want to make sure overall for this ordinance, but this specifically, maybe this question for the city attorney is, I mean, this has been looked at to see if we feel comfortable that this ordinance would pass muster under the seemingly limited guidance that courts have put out after, that are testing the limits of Martin v. Boise.
I could answer just a little while he's looking. We have collaborated, myself, the city manager's office, with Laura, helping me out, putting this all together the right way, because I wanted to collaborate and find out from everybody their angles. The city attorney's office has been sent several different drafts of this. They've actually made numerous suggestions that we've implemented. As far as the 500 feet, some cities have that. We put it in there because we believed it was a good number of feet, you know, to keep our areas of government buildings, schools, rivers, creeks, you know, water sources, from having large camps, encampments.
Mm-hmm. And then in the areas, we talk about, in all very high fire severity zones, and I saw in another place, I think we're in discussion that we were referring to the wildland-urban interface from a fire perspective. I'm not sure that the WUI, the wildland urban interface, is the same as very high fire severity zones.
Again, that text came from another agency's, another city's ordinance, and it definitely applies to our community because we have several areas like that are overgrown brush that would be a very high fire risk.
I would say for us, it's as you identified, the urban.
It is the wildland urban interface.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's all of the west side and some of the east side, but it brings me to the question. We have, you know, an interesting road network in Atascadero. We might have some wide right of ways that might, you know, have a lot of brush or whatever. Could I camp in, let's say, a wide public right-of-way on just a regular street that isn't near one of these other things? In front of your house, let's say. Or
I don't get what your question is.
Well, I mean, we have, on the side of each street, there's a public right-of-way, right?
Correct.
And in some of those cases, it's hidden by brush, might be a great place to set up a tent. Can I camp in the public right-of-way as long as it's not near one of these other things?
And honestly, I mean, the ordinance allows for it if in fact, you're using the time, place, and manner.
Okay, that's what I'm curious about.
Those are the areas where I think it's permissible to camp under this ordinance. There are those areas, as you just described.
Okay, and that would include then in residential areas if they happen to have a little wide right-of-way on their stretch of the road, somebody could pop a tent in there.
As this ordinance is written, yes, city properties that are not developed or wide open right-of-ways, as you're describing, could be places you could be.
Okay, because I just could see that, you know, obviously, if it was right in front of your house, that might be of concern, although it would be subject to these other limitations in terms of, you know, obviously the time and, you know, perhaps the number of days.
Are you adjacent to a roadway where that's unsafe or a safety issue? Or are you blocking access to a residence or a sidewalk or a walking path? You couldn't do that, but
right.
There are those areas, theoretically, where you could camp under this ordinance, yes.
Okay. Okay, and let me see what else. I think that might do it because I, you know, obviously asked you a lot of questions this morning. I think that might do it. In general, maybe I'll save this for the comment period because I do want to focus on the accumulation of crap because that's one of the things I think that drives people nuts is, you know, they have a degree of personal sympathy for homeless people, but it seems to always come with a great deal of crap everywhere, and we'll see this, those of us participate in the creek cleanup, I'm pleased that this focuses on or does seem to address to some substantial degree the limitation on accumulating stuff. And so, okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay. Thank you. I have a number of questions, but we'll start with. I know a number of the elements of this look like the Grover Beach ordinance. So I know that one of the things that they did, is my understanding, before they passed their ordinances, is they looked at their point count numbers of unhoused persons in their jurisdiction, and had taken steps in purchasing properties and opening shelter beds and a pathway to have enough shelter beds open to equal that number. Have we done any, is that consistent with your understanding, and have we done any similar process?
Not to the degree that is consistent with my understanding, not to the degree they did. They really waited on implementation till the Cabins for Hope was opening. They really tried to line it up more with that. So we have Echo. Echo is full today, but they are moving people to Housing Amen and have rooms and beds open. Thank you again. You do miracle work. They have beds continue to open, but they fill, right? And so do we have another place that's next? No, as a staff effort, and I said earlier, if we're putting this effort into cleaning stuff from our community for health and welfare and creating safety, and we need to put an equal effort into the response to where else can people be with their stuff safely? Where else can they use the restroom? So staff is preliminarily looking at, I received a list of 5 locations today. I haven't looked at them, but we talked about that yesterday when we met. But we're not at the same degree that Grover Beach is, nor have I received that direction. But yes, we are looking at spaces, and I think that's part of this continued evolution of how we address this issue in our community.
Okay, so the other thing I noticed from Grover Beach's process is that they had initially had a broader number, as Council Member Burbeau was mentioning, that 500 feet on either side of quite a few assets is pretty substantial. And the in Grover Beach, they looked at it, and there was almost no remaining area left that was allowed for people to camp, and therefore they had to cut that back a little bit so that they would have an ordinance that was legally defensible. I am interested in knowing whether or not this gets us to, Councilmember Derez was saying, where are people going to go? Is there where? If we've specified all these paces as not allowed, where do people go? And is there enough space left in those various right-of-ways and miscellaneous things to have it for us to have a legally defensible ordinance here?
The 500 feet, again, it's up to the city council to make a recommendation at this point, because if you don't believe as a group that that's defensible, I'll agree with you 100%. I mean, that's, and we can go back to work and make this thing where you think it would be more accurate or more in line with what our other cities are doing that have an ordinance that's defensible. We actually had our legal look at it, and they did not have us change the 500 feet, so we left it.
But I think that is a policy issue for you to consider. What ultimately is that space, and what is enough for you? Regarding creeks and waterways, the water company did send us a formal letter saying they want at least 300 feet. They are concerned that they've seen materials in their monitoring wells that are concerning at the end of the creek as it approaches the river, and so that was a specific number. We exceed that in this ordinance, so that's something the council could certainly discuss. I do want to reiterate, where do people go? People can camp with a sleeping bag and a tent in these spaces as long as they wake up in the morning and fold it up and don't have stuff. I mean, so the point, you have a right to sleep, and you have a right, the court has ruled, let me restate that, to sleep, and sleep with something that gives you some protection from the elements, right? So a tent and a sleeping bag. You can put that in places as long as you're rolling it up in the morning and leaving. And I think the bottom line is this is a protection for us to get stuff that accumulates. And so I want to make sure that where will people go if the council approve this tomorrow, as the chief said, we're not going to move people out unless they're having stuff in these areas that create a health and welfare issue or a nuisance. And so this is very restrictive, though, as I shared in my opening comments, and that is for the council to consider. We believe this was the direction we needed to go with what the community's been seeing, but you're the leaders of the community. It's up for you to debate and decide what's too much or what's right.
Yeah, and I think we are all eager to see us be able to manage the way these public spaces are shared. And to do so in the context of a comprehensive set of initiatives to deal with a very challenging problem for the community. Is it fair to note that we have already done a number of things to help provide assets? I mean, I'm thinking of, I'll add to this list if you need, that we expanded ECHO to a 24/7 operation. We invested community development block grant dollars in adding 10 beds to ECHO, that we expanded the Our Team and contract with ECHO for outreach, that we have placed homelessness as a strategic priority consistent with the countywide strategic plan adopted in 2022. That we've contributed actively to the leadership of HSOC and the countywide strategic plan, that we have been supportive of the state's effort to make property on Ash available for permanent supportive housing and low-income housing on the front lawn of Ash, that we've supported approved California Manor proceeding with about 70 additional beds of senior low-income housing that has started construction, as I understand. That we have committed funds from our inclusionary housing ordinance to support people's self-help housing in doing a 44-bed project, and that we've did the impact fee deferral that we just approved tonight in final, that also supports permanent supportive housing and low-income housing in the community, which means that people would eventually have a place to get out of the creeks and streets and into something permanent. Did I miss anything major of the steps that we've done?
That's a great list. I think that goes to show the council's collective focus on addressing this concern.
Okay. And does that give us legally what we need to stand on in terms of making this greater effort to manage how public spaces are shared? That even though at last point in time count, there were 93 people in the community that were unhoused, and we only have 60 beds in our shelter, and they're full.
We've done a legal review of this ordinance, and we believe it is appropriate under the current law.
I'm sorry?
I said we've done a legal review of this ordinance, and we believe it is appropriate under current law.
Okay.
Now, as your city manager has said, like, for example, the 500 feet, if for some reason the council wanted to lower that number, you have that discretion.
Okay. Now, that's something we can discuss when we get there. Can you describe how this works? One of the things that the city has done, I didn't have in that list, to help manage stuff, is that when people are unhoused and they and unsheltered, they have no place to throw away their trash because the trash dumpsters belong to other people that already pay the fees for those. So we have the City Orange Bag Program, where the city stocks these orange bags and people can put their trash in them, and the city will pick them up. If people are being dispersed to a wider range of locations and potentially into more residential areas of the city, how does that affect how we'll be handling the orange bag program, where people get the orange bags, how much stuff can go in them, and and how we can keep the trash from accumulating?
I can let you know that our team and our CAT team go out, like I said, 5 days a week. Today, they're out cleaning up a camp. They accumulate a lot of things. Most of it would be garbage. And, we have a contracted team that goes out with us. Of course, they're not going to go out alone because some of the behaviors that are experienced, they don't want to go out alone. So they go with a police escort. Same thing with our intervention team. They go out with a police escort because you don't know what's going to be day to day. But they'll go out two, sometimes three times a week to clean out camps. Which camps? Which ones do they pick? Well, they're out talking to, doing their outreach all day long, 5 days a week. They know where all the people are. And if they don't know where one person is, they just ask another one of the the unhoused folks. And they go, oh, yeah, well, those two moved over there under this bridge. Okay, so then they make it a point, put it in their notepad, and they go over and visit them, find out if they need any services, and they go to their camp and see that it's a shambles or they've collected five shopping cart loads of things, then they would call out and tell them that we're going to bait this, give them the warning, and you need to take your things out that are meaningful and of some kind of value, and then we're going to throw away your trash for you. You can designate your pile of trash, okay, and the things that you take, that are yours that you want to keep with you. In enacting this ordinance, again, they're going to have to move their camp every day. They can come right back to the same spot, but they can't keep all their property at a campsite. That way we don't have a big, we'll call it another village like we've been having at certain places in town that just accumulate more trash. But you talk about the orange bags. Honestly, we go out with a team, that's contracted, and they collect the trash and they take it to the dump. If somebody that's unhoused has to go to the hospital, somebody's unhoused goes to jail, somebody's unhoused ends up going into some kind of rehabilitation facility, they don't have nowhere to put their things. We take their things, we mark it with their name, take it out to the city yard, and it's out there for 90 days. And they can come, they make an appointment, they can come out during business hours and retrieve their property because their name's on it.
Okay, so that's very helpful. And then the orange bag program seems to be complementary to those cleanup efforts, where the effort of orange bag is
because people don't have a way to throw away the, you know, the carton of milk they just drank, or the napkin or the food wrappers, or all of the stuff that, that accumulates as people are eating out by themselves, that those things can go in the orange bags and the city will pick them up. So it would, will we still be doing that, and will we still be able to have some way that people who are, those of our unhoused community who are actually trying to not be have a lot of trash accumulate, that they have a way to handle that trash?
We would not reduce services to the unhoused community. This ordinance doesn't do that. It actually gives them parameters that are definable and understandable to our community, to let them know this is what the standard is. This is, you know, what we're going to expect. Obviously, they would have to learn it over a period of time. We get that. But if you're going to do the orange bag program, that wouldn't go away. And us doing the camp cleanups, that's not going to go away. Right. I mean, our community expects that, and we're going to continue with that. It's been a program that's obviously successful, and so we're going to keep on cleaning up camps.
So on the that outreach that our team does to the camps, if our sworn officers encounter someone who's under the bridge but does not have a big pile of stuff with them, are they going to need to, are they going to be able to give a pass on that situation, or are they going to need to enforce the ordinance?
I think I've articulated earlier, it's going to be a spirit of the law more than a letter of the law. I think that's kind of the way Atascadero is. Is this person causing a problem in the community? Did we have 4 calls for service the night before as a result of this camp or these campers? We want to kind of address the behavior in that respect, because guess the rest of the community deserves that. We can't let the behaviors of 2 or 1 affect the behavior, you know, affect the lifestyles of several. So we would do our very best to, you know, again, use the spirit of the law and letter of the law when you had to. But again, we don't have a law right now that we could use letter of the law in an instance if we needed it.
Okay. And then, and pardon that because there's a lot in this ordinance, I do have a number of questions. I want to move to the portion of the law that addresses vehicular camping on private property. I think that's on
49, page 49.
So we have. Yeah, 49 and 50, mostly on page 49. So among these, could you tell me if there, I see that there's an exception for camping out with minor children, which, you know, everybody likes to have an occasional camp garden, camp out in the backyard type thing, and that's obviously not going to be interfered with. Is there any provision in this that protects people who are given a break to their adult children who might be away on military deployment or needing to come back home and get a little respite while they're dealing with a medical issue or a divorce or other, those kinds of things?
Again, I'm going to explain this. The private property ordinance is going to be the exact same thing as the other ordinance, the other part of the ordinance. Is the spirit of the law, letter of the law? Okay, is this property becoming a nuisance? Does somebody move 3 RVs onto a property and they're dumping raw sewage, or they're having loud parties, or they're lighting, you know, they're having a big bonfire every night, or they're loud music, amplified music? I mean, is there a reason that there's attention being called to the property? And if there is, then again, we can inform them of the ordinance. It's an educational process. Nobody's going out there and giving them a ticket. You're going to tell them there's an ordinance in place. These are the prohibitions. you need to abide by them and then come back and check in a day or two, or if you get more calls, you go back. And we have a system of re-education as much as we possibly can until they're just not getting the point. Then they end up with some kind of a citation, which happens rarely. But in your example of our kids out in the yard camping, and maybe they're making noise at night, that's not going to really be something that the police department's going to go out there and crash a party, a sleepover party. If that's what you read into it, we're not. That's not what we're doing. We're not going to go out there and, like you said, if somebody has a family member that's sleeping in an RV for a night because they just got back from deployment and there's not enough room in the house, that's fine. Are we going to go out to look for somebody sleeping in an RV? Probably not. Does it become a nuisance? Does it get brought to our attention because of something? Maybe a neighbor doesn't like that. And if a neighbor doesn't like that, then we'll be kind of, between a rock and a hard place, got to go out there and tell them, like, this is what the ordinance reads. We need to get you into compliance because, we have had complaints. Obviously, we're not going to tell them who complained, and then try to get them to fall within the ordinance.
Right. And if they were having loud parties in this RV, this we would be able to deal with that as a noise complaint anyway, right?
Correct. That would be like 415 under the penal code. You can't disturb anybody else's peace. Doesn't matter what time of day it is, what day of week it is. So we have a complainant. They would call in, hey, they're having a loud party. We would deal with that, not the ordinance. The ordinance would come in later when they still refuse to comply and say, look, and you're also out of compliance. And, you're not allowed to stay out here in an RV after all. This is the ordinance. We'd hand them a copy of it or show it on our phone what the adopted ordinance is and what it says.
And Mayor, if I may, I can weigh in on this section too, because
sure thing.
This mm-hmm. really is, it does dip into the community development world, this whole section. As it stands today in our ordinance, we don't allow anyone to stay in an RV on any residential property in the city. That's not changing with this ordinance. Now, does RV stays, do RV stays happen in our community? Of course they do. Family stays in an RV, comes over and does it. Is it technically legal? It's not. But that's something that happens on a passive way. This is being put in place to actually expand the potential of staying in RVs, not on residential properties. This is intended for commercial properties. This is intended for a church or a homeless shelter that might have this provision and they come in and get approval for it. So I wanted to make that a public statement that this does not enable someone to come in who has a house on the west side to say, I'm going to have three RVs on my property tonight. Can I get a permit to do that under these provisions? No, that wouldn't be allowed, because the very first section in this ordinance that you can see here, notwithstanding any other provision of this code, and our code on RV stays is quite strict in a residential district and only allows one to stay in an RV while they have an active open permit to build a new house and while they're kind of watching the property for that house. That's not going to change. And so these provisions are really designed for that sort of nonprofit or religious facility that's going to have that provision. But at the same time, the passive use of an RV is something that we need the ability to enforce it, but generally it's not going to be enforced unless it's a significant issue.
Okay, yeah. That as I've read this, it was that you had that if somebody had a property, they could have up to three vehicles in a parcel, as long as they certified that there was no other faith-based institution, not-for-profit, or business that would accommodate those folks, and they got permission. Is that not the correct way to read
that?
That's
not the correct way to read it. So if they are a faith-based institution, or they are a nonprofit such as ECHO, or if they are a commercial property with a commercial business license and they have a parking lot and they have the adequate space and provisions to support this use, they could come in to check that they're going to be compliant with these provisions in this code, and we would authorize them to do that on a very temporary basis for 72 hours. So this is a sort of a stopgap that expands the potential, not adding additional regulation. It really is expanding what we don't have today, but it doesn't expand this to residential districts or other areas that wouldn't normally allow this because of that section in the very beginning, notwithstanding any other provision of this code. And it is RV stays, are mentioned in several portions of our code, including Title IX.
Okay. And then the 72 hours that if you had, a church did a safe parking site, now that seems to be what we're talking about here. So if a church did a small safe parking site and they had three vehicles that people could stay for 72 hours and then they would have to be somewhere else for overnight or some other period of time, and then they maybe could come back if they were continuing to deal with being unhoused.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. That'll do me for questions for now. I obviously have comments as we get there.
All right. Thank you all for clarifying for us, for Chief. Thank you very much. I am now going to open up to public comment on this item, and we want to hear from you about this ordinance, your questions, your input and concerns. So anyone here in chambers, come on up to the lectern, and if you are in the webinar, please raise your hand. If you're on the phone, you can press star 9, and if you are, I'll give this information right now in case you're listening on channel, on KPRL 1230, or you're watching on channel 20. I think we're still on channel 20, right? I stream now, so I don't know. Channel 20, and or you're on YouTube, you can call in to the meeting at 669-900-6833. Once again, that's 669-900-6833, and you'll be asked for a meeting ID, which is 889-2347-9018. Again, meeting ID 889-2347-9018. And with that, I see Ms. Brenda Mack in the webinar.
Yes, thank you. All I'm going to say on the camping ordinance, the Boise decision was about someone sleeping on a public sidewalk. The other thing is, I believe, and it may be waiting for the governor's signature, where faith-based people can have homeless encampments on their property. I believe that passed. I'm not sure. The other thing I would like to say, since the council has noted we're probably going to have a rainy season, that perhaps the city would consider partnering with Good Samaritan from Santa Barbara, like the other cities are, because they have a proven track record, particularly as a homeless person out there during COVID, having numerous conversations with certain city officials and state officials and county officials, trying to get services like trash and, at the very least, bathrooms, that they had better experience. They were able to feed their homeless warm meals. And as it is, Atascadero does not have a warming shelter after having a successful program. And I think that would help with some of the camping, that people had a safe place to go to. And it will be interesting to see how much of that $50,000 will be used to prevent some of the homeless deaths that are occurring through warming shelters. I was in the warming shelter. The majority of the people that I was there with are now dead. So it's kind of personal to me. And the encampments, what I would like to say to the city attorney is this what the city of Camarillo is doing? And also, as maybe people are not aware, the Ninth Circuit reaffirmed the Boise decision about what you can and cannot do, give camping tickets for. And whoever told the police that there are 35 homeless people out there obviously are not counting. And I may add that Echo did not participate in the point of time count. So apparently we need some help with our homeless. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Mack. Anyone else wishing to speak? If there's anyone in here, please come on up to the podium, and anyone that can raise their hand, Mr. Jeff Oslin.
Good evening, Council. I think this is a great step in helping clean up the community. I do have a few questions and hopefully can have some clarification. In terms of camping with kids camping outside, I believe that was pretty much cleared up, but that wouldn't be a big issue on your own property if kids were camping in your backyard or a slumber party or something of that nature. I'd like to have that reconfirmed. As far as the where you can sleep and where you can't, the way I'm hearing this is you could sleep underneath the underpass at El Camino and Morrow Road overnight, and that would provide you shelter, but you would need to clean up and move along during the day. If that's correct, that's a great thing. Does that also cover the tunnel between Sunken Gardens, if you will, and Echo ABC, that area? Because we do have homeless encampments happening in there. Happened again yesterday morning. I know we've had a call in to get it cleared out because it's really not a good environment for our children to be walking through a narrow area like that with things all over the place. And then the Terry Banish question comes into play, so you can all chuckle. But we have Colony Days coming up. Can you camp overnight in Sunken Gardens during Colony Days, for instance, or during Beer Fest? And it is a cordoned off area, or can we have a provision in there that you can have a permit because you might be there in standard time, 5 o'clock at night, if the event doesn't start till the next day or something, and maybe folks are sleeping there to keep an eye on their stuff, or even our city's doing that. So those are my questions, and I think this is a great start to stop filling up 40-yard dumpsters on overpasses that cost the city a fortune every week. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Anyone else wishing to speak, please raise your hand in the webinar. Anyone else coming forward here in chambers?
Welcome. Austin Solheim, El Camino Homeless Organization, or ECHO. I just wanted to come up here and just say thank you for the continued collaboration that we have with the city of Atascadero and the police department. The relationships that we've been able to see firsthand that the police and the outreach case managers from ECHO have been able to create, and the trust that that's been able to establish, has led to some of those successful 132 men, women, and children who have been housed this year. And so as things change, as our city changes, as policy changes, we just ask as an organization that we continue to work towards that continued collaboration between our agencies in outreach and connecting and building trust with those that are facing and experiencing homelessness. As things change for us and things change for those in our community, that trust is more and more important. And so the more ways that we can continue to do that, to be flexible, to really just establish that outreach team as it continues to grow, we look forward to that continued partnership. And so thank you for that. And thank you for giving us that opportunity to work.
Thank you, Austin. Anyone else wishing to speak on this item? I'm not seeing anyone get up or any hands raised, so let me just give it a quick moment, because sometimes people wait to see if anyone else is going to speak. I'm not seeing anyone, so going once, going twice. All right, I'll go ahead and close public comment on this item. Bring it back to council. I will go backwards, and we too appreciate that collaboration with ECHO, and our officers, our whole team is doing a superb job and really, really quite pleased. So thank you for the role you play in that. Mr. Oslin, yes, kids can camp in the backyard, no problem. No camping under underpasses would not be safe. Under place number 14 within 500 feet of any bridge, highway, underpasses, or highway overpasses or freeway on-ramps and off-ramps. So no, that is not a possibility. I will ask staff with regards to, camping overnight for, say, Colony Days or something like that. I'm sure that's happened in the past. That's not what this is about. And if it's a one-time thing, it's, we're a little bit let live and let live here. But if somebody wanted to address that.
Well, I think the ordinance allows for, short answer is no. You can't just party in the Sutton Gardens and hook up your tent. If that became an issue, that would probably be right. Something we'd knock on your tent and say, ma'am, sir, can you please go home? If you didn't have a home, then we would have to escort you to somewhere you could. However, this does give a out for city planned recreational events or organized programs that have asked for a permit from the city, scouting or other things. If they're doing a special camp out at a place, this does allow for that. So I want to be very clear, there can be registered or permitted outdoor recreation for youth groups or church groups or other groups on city property if it's part of a recreation program or a zoo overnight or something like that.
So it doesn't mean Mr. Oslin could come to a council meeting and then just set up camp outside on Second Gardens. I know I'm kind of picking on you tonight, Jeff, but it's fun. But good questions. All right. Ms. Mack, she had mentioned the 35 number. Chief, my understanding from talking with our Officer Sloan is that the regular contact that our team and even CAT, but that our team is in touch with, that at any given point in time, like you said, his numbers said can fluctuate as low as 30 up to, he kind of said 47-ish is what he's seen, but you know, let's say on average 40-ish people on the streets. That does not include those sheltered at Echo, correct?
Correct. That is the number. He gave me a number this morning, 35, 45 is an average. It'll go up to sometimes 50. It can go down to as low as, you know, in the low 30s, depending on where people are being housed for different reasons.
Yeah. So yeah, I didn't want to make sure that was understood, that was our one-on-one contact week after week, day after day, with the unhoused population, and that did not include Echo, of course. She was asking too with regards to our city attorney had kind of brought up city of Camarillo and legalities, but you've said that you've taken a look at this and we are within the law of what we're doing.
That's right.
Okay. And then with regards to kind of rainy day warming shelter, I know our city manager said we're looking at, you know, potential, you know, properties for things where we could provide some, whether it's, you know, trash areas or bathrooms and things like that. I know, yeah, Good Samaritan, they've been doing some work down in San Luis Obispo, and I trust our staff will be figuring out the things that we need to for our community. And then faith-based, she was asking that it is still true that they can have homeless. I believe that if that's part of their mission, they can do a homeless shelter at their property. Is that correct? Or they could house homeless there?
Within their sanctuary, yes. And that's been a practice in the past that they've had a warming shelter, cooling shelter within their church buildings. When they're a church that either has a use permit that allows for that or one that was grandfathered in prior to city incorporation, which are several that fit that category.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, I think the main thing that I heard between Councilmember Bourbeau and Mayor Pro Tem Funk bringing up was the 500 feet and wondering if there's any other point that we needed to discuss, or is that the main one?
Yeah, I have a couple of things.
Okay. Any? Councilmember Darris?
Just one thing. Mr. Olson also asked about camping in the tunnel between Sunken Gardens and the high school, and I believe that's within 500 feet, so the answer would be no.
Correct.
It's about 200 feet from the creek, just to...
And it's 200 feet from the creek. Okay, there's that.
And you'd be blocking a walkway. That's not the place to camp, correct?
Yeah, so I just want to make sure you got the answer. And then before we get into further discussion, since I kind of have the floor, I'm in favor of leaving this exactly the way it is. I think the 500 feet is fine. I see no reason to make it less restrictive. So I just wanted to put my two cents on it since I have the opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I will ask Councilmember Newsom, we haven't heard from you yet. I wanted to see if there's anything in particular you wanted to bring up.
I think all my colleagues have answered and asked the questions.
And is there any input you had at this time? Okay. Go right ahead.
Yeah. One of the things that, as we talked about the question of, you know, so where are people actually allowed to go? And I tried to look at that in terms of taking what was on the city website for fire severity zones, which is the wildland urban interface, and then just doing a quickie drawing on it of the waterways where these were and church and the school properties and the bigger city properties that I recognized. And what I came up with is a map where everything in color in the city would not be allowed? Is a place where necessity camping would be prohibited under all circumstances? And that the areas in white are the ones that are left, and those are mostly residential areas. So I want us to be mindful as we look at this, for us to think about the extent to which we are taking people who are camping around in places that are problematic, but who can, say, get to the porta potty out in front of Echo at least some of the time, and who have access to the Orange Bag program, so they're not adding all daily trash all the time, and pushing them out into residential areas and sort of random pieces of rights of way, with where the supports, the access to bathrooms and trash are going to be even less. We need to be mindful if that's what we're in. If we end up doing, that's not necessarily going to get us to what we're, the goal we're trying to achieve with this. So that that would be a concern. I also wonder, how are people who are, you know, hanging around with only a cell phone supposed to figure out where these pieces of property are that where they can, under Boise and under this ordinance, be able to stay from overnight?
I thought this was discussion. You're asking me another question?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if that was rhetorical.
Right. So how are people supposed to figure that out?
We're not. This is more restrictive. The point is clearing camps. I think the chief was very clear that we're not running people out if they aren't causing a problem and they aren't causing a health or safety issue and they aren't causing a nuisance. And so I think the goal is we're dealing with people again. And so it's just to stop the stockpiling of camps and stuff. And if something becomes a nuisance or a water quality issue or something else, this is a tool by which we could break down that camp within 24 hours. And so I think you heard the chief say we communicate with the unhoused every day. We're not looking to move anybody out of their space right now if they're not causing a disturbance and they're not storing a bunch of stuff that will create an issue for safety and welfare. So I think the chief said that a few times in the spirit of the law comments. That is certainly our intent on enforcement of this. We won't be publishing a map on where the city parcels are where you can go. I think that's contrary to what we're trying to establish. But there are areas of right-of-way. There are city properties that are. We had to look at that as part of this ordinance so it's enforceable. You and I discussed a few of those that I think are potential places where people could be. You pointed one out near 41, and so I think that there are places where people could be. But the point is, we don't want people in walkways, in the middle of sunken gardens, storing stuff, or causing issues with school or other people. And so that's what this is really about. I think the how we enforce it is important, and I think how we're telling you we'll enforce it before you vote is important for you to know. But again, if this is too much for the council, we're looking for your direction on it. But you're raising point. This is a more restrictive ordinance. There's no doubt about it, and that is what we submitted because we're trying to address the stuff issue.
Yeah, and if it's in the general frame for me of if we don't like where people are, we need to make sure they have someplace else to go, because the Boise decision is, you know, as I would. And the city attorney can, you know, correct me if this is grossly unfair, but it basically says that people have a right to take up space in the world, and they're going to sleep because human beings do that. And if people don't have a private space, they have rights to take up public space, and we have to make sure that they have places to go. But at the same time, they don't have a right to build their house in the park. Is that?
That is correct.
I'm looking at the city attorney in case he's wanted to comment.
I'm not sure it's quite as simple as what you just said.
Well, of course.
I think the Boise decision and the Grants Pass decision, you know, those are lengthy court opinions, and I don't think I'm going to be able to summarize it in a couple of minutes here, but I can tell you that in my opinion, this ordinance is consistent with that law. I do know that there are petitions being filed for certiorari with the United States Supreme Court now, which may or may not impact what the rule of law will be. But what this ordinance does is impose time, place, and manner regulations on where individuals may camp.
Yeah, and the spirit of what we're trying to do is, you know, is spot on. That's why we're, you know, countywide, we're trying to get more pathways out of homelessness and more ways to shelter people so that we can, individually as jurisdictions, be able to have the right to manage our public spaces better. I would encourage us to give direction to staff to keep working on the kinds of additional spaces and services that would build on the record of support that we've already done and help make sure that we create avenues for access to inclement weather shelter, trash service, and bathrooms. Because that's really where, you know, those are the things that are just driving our community nuts.
I would say that while I'm certainly willing for us to be open to those opportunities and supporting an organization that would do that, we do not have the resources to actually run a warming shelter. So right. That is not where I would want to give direction. But certainly the city manager understanding, you know, where we're coming from, and within capacity, budget-wise and staff-wise, where we can find resources to better help the unhoused. And with everything that we're doing, we already do actually invest a lot of resources, and you've heard about those tonight with our team, CAT team, many personnel that go into this. So this is something we have heavily invested in to help these individuals because it's important to them and to our entire community on many fronts. So I think, is that understandable enough? Thank you.
Yeah, we're always looking for opportunities to partner or find services that I certainly understand that.
Yeah, and I would clarify that I was not suggesting that the city would run those operations, but look for opportunities to support them to make space available and to coordinate with others in doing so, much as you see in Grover Beach where the city purchased property that they then leased for $1 a year to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which operates the Cabins for Change.
Well, and as you listed out, we are doing many things and have been doing many things for the past decade. So, and thank you for listing those. Councilmember Borbo.
Thank you. I just wanted to do a follow-on question, make sure I'm reading this correctly. So if I find a place, and the city's not going to give me a guide map, if I find a place that, you know, doesn't fall under one of these prohibited location criteria, perhaps a wide right-of-way in the road, like I mentioned, I'm still subject to all of these other provisions, correct? That, you know, I can't have a pile, you know, piles of crap around me. You know, I can only take up so much space, et cetera. So those still apply. So if somebody's in a place that is not prohibited, you know, we could still cite them, move them along if they're causing a problem with their piles of stuff.
Yeah, there's still time and manner provisions that yeah. also follow.
Yes, got it. Thank you. We're into comment mode, right? So my comment is I do think that we, you know, should make it 300 feet instead of 500 feet. Probably not going to die on that hill. I just don't feel it. I mean, 500 seems a little overly restricted in terms of protecting these particular facilities. But overall, this ordinance, you know, is something we needed to do, something along these lines to give our police and other departments tools to help do this. I would like to see in a follow-on that we address a shopping cart ordinance and also perhaps see if you know, Echo could have some sort of a personal property storage program to further not only encourage but, you know, undergird the enforcement part of, you know, we sympathize with homelessness, but that doesn't mean you have the right to accumulate piles and piles of crap and, you know, junk up the whole town and areas and around neighborhoods, et cetera. So those are two things I'd like to see as perhaps follow-on measures to help solidify some of the intent behind this ordinance.
Councilmember Newsom.
I know it's so challenging to sit here and try to figure out how we solve the homeless problems. They've been around since I've been a child. I was a homeless child. I was a homeless teenager. We had the ability to live in a car, which made it a little bit easier. So as we look at some of these challenges, we look at right-of-ways, where you can park. I will say that organizations such as Echo, Homeless Shelter, our team, are crucial and determining the resources for these families that find themselves in there. I don't think that we should reduce the footprint below 500 feet, especially around our schools. Our young children are very vulnerable, don't need to be subjected to any of the challenges that we're trying to address. And what we're trying to address is the trash, the human waste, as well as being a little respectful for the community in which you live. It's challenging when you're homeless and we drive down the side off ramps and these young kids look out the window and want to know why those people live like that and why we live in a house. Echo has done some amazing outreach with some of the homeless. I've sat at Sunken Gardens and talked to several of them of what finds them sitting on our steps or wanting to sleep outdoors in the elements. A lot of it is a substance abuse. They don't want to follow through or adhere to requirements that living in a society requires them to do, and that's drug testing, alcohol testing, substance abuse, or getting mental health treatment. It's very challenging for them to make that commitment. But one of the things that Echo has been really good about is offering those people that are struggling and on the streets, giving them bags, rolling bags. I mean, if you've looked at some of the homeless people, their personal belongings fit in one or two bags. My mother had one bag and one bag only. It was a pink duffel bag that went with us everywhere from my childhood. She still has some of that and one duffel bag. So being caring for those that are homeless by providing them a way to take their belongings with them is great. An entire shopping cart or three shopping carts is just not feasible. So reaching out to them, I think I think our community has really done an outstanding job of addressing those issues. So when I look at this ordinance, I don't feel offended by it as a former homeless person, because we are doing everything we can as a city to address the needles that are found in our parks. Our kids are walking barefoot with needles, drug paraphernalia, fentanyl packets. My young daughter picks up a fentanyl packet, she's going to die of an overdose. You know why? Because I don't carry Narcan. So when we're addressing this, this isn't just about someone that's down on their luck and doesn't have a place to sleep. It has to do with quality of life of those of us who live here, as well as our children, our elderly parents, all of it. We're all equally here. We all have to share the burden of responsibility. I have no issues with this ordinance.
I will say, very well said. Thank you for sharing your personal experience, and you stated, I think, very concisely the balance of having compassion and mercy for those who are experiencing homelessness, as well as that same compassion and mercy for the residents who live here. With that, I think we have a consensus to go with the ordinance as is, and as our chief has said, it is a tool, it is not a hammer. But as a tool to help address problems. So I will look to my colleagues for a motion.
I'll make the motion.
You're going to need to do more than that. There's two ordinances here. The first one is the urgency ordinance, and that requires a four-fifths vote. So you need to take them one at a time. If you look to the agenda.
All right, thank you. I did not see that on my, all right. Thank you very much. That's why we have a city attorney here.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a motion from Councilmember Newsom on adopting draft urgency ordinance A, repealing and replacing in its entirety Title V, Chapter 15 of the Municipal Code, et cetera.
And before you vote, would that include the correction on the square footage to 100 square feet in two places?
Yes. Yes, well, it said 10 square feet. It meant 10 by 10, 100 square feet. Yes. Yes. All right. So we have a motion with those amendments on the urgency ordinance A by Councilmember Newsom, a second by Councilmember Darris. Roll call, please.
And may I clarify, does this also include the instruction that we were discussing to staff to encourage continued pursuit of
They have that. They have that direction. Yes, they do.
it's not in the ordinance, but they have that direction from us that to the extent we have capacity and we're able to finding additional services, providing, making connections, the things that we continue to do. Yes.
Okay. And that is consistent in your action plan. It talks about that from the work you've already done. And so I've read that action plan, and you voted on that several months ago.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure that was clear.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you, and I will look for a motion.
Wait a second, really quick. I have to read the title.
That's right.
An urgency ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, repealing and replacing in its entirety Title V, Chapter 15, Prohibited Camping of the Atascadero Municipal Code to address prohibited camping on public and private property, regulate storage of personal property on public property, and establish time, manner, and place regulations for camping by necessity.
Excellent. Thank you. And can I get a motion for draft ordinance B with those that change of 100 square feet?
I'll make that motion.
And it's understood that what you're doing now is introducing, it's a motion to introduce the ordinance for a first reading.
Of draft ordinance B, correct?
Yes, sir.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Newsom and second by Councilmember Darris. Please read the ordinance and then roll call, please.
This is draft ordinance B, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, repealing and replacing in its entirety Title V, Chapter 15, Prohibited Camping of the Atascadero Municipal Code to address prohibited camping on public and private property, regulate storage of personal property on public property, and establish time, manner, and place regulations for camping by necessity. Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, on to council announcements and committee reports. This is us letting you know on our own initiative, making a brief announcement or report on our activities in the community, and then we also represent several standing committees and can give you an informative status report if we feel that's necessary. And it isn't always, but sometimes it is. I'll start with Councilmember Darris.
APCD meets tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and Capsule Board is meeting Thursday evening, and that's all I have.
Integrated Waste Management Authority Board meets tomorrow at 1:30, but I have nothing to report at this time.
Councilmember Darris was modest in not taking credit for the 3.5 or 3 hour design review committee meeting that we had to answer a lot of community questions about the next iteration of the Dove Creek commercial property, and that was with a variety of guidance from the community and from the members of the design review committee, then approved for the staff to continue working with the applicant and moving that on to the Planning Commission as the next step. Then also last week was the Homeless Services Oversight Council. Several things are noteworthy. Let's see, we're going to do a support for Five Cities Homeless Coalition getting an additional up to $200,000 to do homeless prevention from some funds that were kind of not used in other pockets of COVID work. They are the one vendor in the county that has the approved policies to do that. A problem that we had, this is good news, with a problem that was with housing vouchers that stopped the housing vouchers from being issued in the county was resolved thanks to Congressman Carbajal. The Haslo got its reserves restored, and they are going to be able to do new vouchers and going to be able to get back and honor vouchers. They had vouchers in the hands of homeless folks who were looking for places and had those vouchers yanked from them because of the problem, and that has been restored. We've already heard from Austin about ECHO's progress. Five Cities Homeless Coalition is also making progress in their 20 cabins for change unit. They've placed their first 29 residents into permanent housing, and they have 166 people on the waiting list for those 20 cabins, and for the additional 30 that they're looking to build, Their success rate in placing people into permanent housing who come into that program is 81%. They are achieving that by using the 90-day program that ECHO has pioneered. We also heard from Forte Prado that they've adopted this 90-day model for some of their beds, and they've gotten their first three graduates from that program into permanent housing. So systematically throughout the county, we are learning from what works and working to implement things that will bring us success. A couple of other things, the medical detox provider that's in San Luis Obispo, that was funded originally with HEAP money and other grants that we've approved, currently only handles male patients, and the female patients have to go to King City, and that is something that the county is working with that provider on. There was some discussion or public comment in there about bathroom access and the difficulties that folks have who are unhoused, who can't get to any kind of bathroom or porta potty physically, or who are in a walk or wheelchair and can't get into what's available. Joe Dzwonek, that many of you met, has just celebrated, had his last day with the county this last Thursday, and breaks my heart because it was terrific to work with him. He has put together an excellent team in the homeless division, and we've assured them that HSOC has their backs. And then last, the HSOC received a report from SLOCOG on the progress that each of the jurisdictions and the county as a whole is making on implementation of RENA numbers. And the general story there is that as we find in Atascadero, that pretty much everybody's exceeding the above the market rate housing in targets, and struggling to meet the low and very low and even the moderate income targets in terms of current implementation. There's quite a bit in the pipeline that will help us address that. And that's it for HSOC, and thanks for letting me give you a fuller update given our topic of the night.
Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. Last week, several of us were down in the League of California Cities, which was a great opportunity, very informative for us to take a lot of seminars. Just wanted to bring to the point that we live in a great community and are very respectful of one another. We sat through a public comment seminar, and I know our attendees, which there's only two of you, are not removing your clothes, not being asked to be removed from our chambers because you can't pull it together. So I wanted to say that we live in a very respectful community, and we are open to public comment, but we do ask that you do keep your clothes on. It didn't fare very well for some of those in Hollywood, so that was entertaining. But just knowing that we're really hitting the mark with what we're doing. Our mayor got up and spoke and could recite our mission statement in front of our General Assembly, and just very, very proud to be able to represent our city this year and be able to attend that in Sacramento. So thank you.
Thank you. That was exciting to do that in front of 2,000 people. Anyone state your values, your mission statement? I'm like, yes, me, I can. So happy to do that. And I was at that same public comment. We didn't even know we were both in it. And I thought, gosh, I feel so blessed to have the community that we do, because we don't have these like awful, disruptive, disrespectful, taking the clothes off or anything like that. So thank all of you for how you engage, that you do engage, number one, and that you're always respectful. I will also say an excellent keynote speaker, Brandon Fleming, look him up, love first, lead second. He was phenomenal. I have a SLOCOG meeting next week. We had a countywide mayor's roundtable, which I got to host here week before last, and was really nice. For the first time in many years, we had it just the mayors and Dave from the League of California Cities, and rather than having a bunch of different speakers and going like this, we really just got to connect with one another, and it was a really nice opportunity to do that.
talked about a lot of different things, and of course Dave Mullinax let us know, as we all know, that ACA 1 and 13 will be on the ballot in November along with that CBRT measure, so a lot coming forward. With that, I will ask if there are any individual determinations. I am seeing none.
Maria Moreno, just for the record, I just want to point out that it was Councilmember Newsom, Councilmember Darris, and Mayor Moreno who attended the League conference. We just need that for the record. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. And so with that, we will adjourn our regular session, and we will return to closed session where we still have three items to review, and if there is any reportable action that will be made at our next regular meeting. Thank you.